Well, just over 10 years ago, in August 2010, there was this huge collapse, you may remember, in a gold mine in Chile. And it left 33 miners trapped deep underground. Experts estimated that the probability of locating and rescuing the missing workers was less than 1%. So you may recall that this rescue team, they ended up drilling a shaft 26 inches in diameter through 700 meters of solid rock, solid granite, and they lowered down this capsule, and then each of the workers were winched to the surface one at a time after 69 days underground. It was one of the greatest rescue operations the world has ever seen, watched live on television by 1 billion people, but not the greatest. That award has to go to the rescue operation carried out by God himself through Jesus Christ in the first century. And there weren't any film crews around at the time to film it, but there were eyewitnesses, and we have their eyewitness testimony in the Gospel accounts in the New Testament. This rescue is the greatest because it is from a greater problem, by a greater rescuer, for a much greater number of people. And this rescue is what today's passage in Mark's Gospel is all about. Though that may not seem immediately obvious. It's a passage recording two miracles of Jesus. His feeding of 5,000 people and his walking on water. But we're going to see that this is about the greatest rescue of all time. If you're someone who's looking into Christian things, this is going to show you why you need Jesus and why it is at the moment that you don't get that, you don't understand that. And for those of us who are Christian, it should move us to be very thankful for Jesus. But it will also warn us that we need to beware rewriting Jesus' agenda. First then, as you'll see on the outline, the feeding with bread miracle. And you'll find it helps to have a Bible open in front of you. You'll see that in verse 30 of chapter 6, the apostles returned to Jesus and they told him everything that they'd done on their preaching and healing mission, having been sent out by him. But now they are going to be reminded of how utterly unique Jesus is. In verse 31, Jesus takes the apostles away by themselves in a boat with him to a desolate place. They'd had this crazy busy stretch of ministry and they needed some rest. But when they arrived at their destination and they come ashore, verse 34, they find a great crowd waiting for him who had sort of hot-footed it round the lake ahead of them. So much for the rest and relaxation. But instead of just telling them to clear off, Jesus spends the day teaching them. It ends up late, verse 35, they're in a desolate place, the people are hungry. Big crowd, so 5,000 men. Verse 44 says, and that figure would have been much higher once you factored in women and children. You give them something to eat, Jesus says to his disciples in verse 37. But they don't have that kind of money. Would have cost half a year's salary to feed so many people. And so in verse 38, you'll see that Jesus tells them to bring to him what food they can find among the crowd, and they come back with just these 5 loaves of bread and these 2 fish. Jesus gets the crowd to sit down in groups. He gives thanks for the food in verse 41. And he starts dividing it up. And he gives it to his disciples to distribute. Imagine how little each person would have got if you divided 5 loaves between, let's just take the 5,000 men. I mean, that means 1 loaf between 1,000 men. Sliced loaf has what, 25 slices? So that would be 1 slice between 40 men. I mean, you'd each get a piece that would be about 1 centimeter square. It'd be like communion. And yet, verse 42, we read, they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 baskets of broken pieces and of the fish. Imagine how much bread and fish you would need for everyone to be full and for there to be so much leftovers. It's a miracle. But what is the significance? So far in Mark's account, we've seen Jesus do plenty of miracles, healing the sick, casting out demons, calming a storm, raising the dead. Is this just another demonstration of his unique power, or is there more to it? Interestingly, this is the only one of Jesus' miracles which is recorded in each of the four gospel accounts. Why? What is so significant about this feeding miracle? Well, the answer is found in the connection with an event in Israel's history. So something very similar to this happened centuries before. And if we're ignorant of this, we're not going to get the significance. You'll have heard in the news this past week, Tiger Woods' car crashed back on Tuesday, in which he suffered serious leg injuries. Imagine in his recovery, they used some revolutionary new technology to help him get back on his feet. And imagine as he takes his first step, he says this: "That's one small step for a man." What would you think? Well, not a lot if you didn't make the historical connection. So if you didn't realize that actually he was quoting Neil Armstrong as he stepped down onto the moon in 1969, where he said, "That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind." And so with this feeding miracle, there's a historical event that it echoes. And miss this, we will miss the significance of what Jesus does. Early on in the history of God's Old Testament people, the Israelites were slaves in Egypt. They were oppressed by cruel masters for hundreds of years. And God promised that one day he would rescue them. And so one day, that day came. Through Moses, with mighty acts of judgment on the Egyptians, he liberated them and he brought his people out. And this exodus was the greatest rescue in Israel's history. Now, one of the key features of this great rescue was that God miraculously fed his people over the next 40 years as they journeyed through the wilderness to the promised land. So he fed them with bread from heaven called manna. And so that future generations would remember this miracle, some of this manna was actually kept in a jar in the Ark of the Covenant. It's Exodus 16. So the bread symbolized this miraculous rescue from slavery. And so bread and rescue were linked together. Now that rescue from Egypt was a model of a greater rescue to come. So the Old Testament prophets, they look forward to the day when God would rescue his people from a greater slavery, from slavery to sin and death and judgment and the devil. Now, against this background, the significance of this feeding miracle by Jesus in Mark's gospel is hopefully starting to come into focus. Many of the details echo the Exodus feeding. So three times it's stated that they were in a desolate place. Verse 31. Verse 32, verse 35, just as the Old Testament people had been in the wilderness. Although Jesus multiplied bread and fish, the focus, you'll notice, is on the bread in verses 37, 38, and verse 44, as it had been in the Exodus. In verse 41, Jesus looked up to heaven from where the Exodus bread had come, bread from heaven. And the point is, well, what was the connection? Bread and rescue. Feeding with bread, miracle, means rescue. This time, the ultimate rescue, not from slavery in Egypt, but from sin and death and the devil and judgment. The ultimate rescue by the ultimate rescuer. God had promised in the Old Testament that he himself would come on this ultimate rescue operation. In Isaiah 40, verses 10 and 11, the Lord had said that he himself would one day come as shepherd to rescue his people. Well, in Jesus, the divine shepherd has come to lead them out. This people who, we read here in verse 34, were like sheep without a shepherd. So that is what is going on here. That is why this miraculous feeding is so significant. It proclaims that the ultimate rescuer has now come, and the ultimate rescue is at hand. Isn't that amazing news? Well, it depends, doesn't it? It depends on how we see ourselves. Do you see yourself as someone who needs this rescue, this rescuer, or do you just see him as being for other people? With the mine disaster in Chile, 1 billion people celebrated as they watched 33 men being rescued. But when it comes to this spiritual rescue from sin, death, judgment, we're not spectators. Yeah, we're not watching this on television. We are the guys underground. We're the ones who are trapped. So by nature, humanity is helpless, trapped in the darkness, in sin and death and judgment. And we all need this rescue. We all need this rescuer. Why did God bother? Well, verse 34 says that when Jesus saw the great crowd, he had compassion on them. Compassion means that you are moved by the suffering of other people and you are moved to help them. And so God saw us in our helpless state, which we had brought on ourselves. And instead of saying, well, serves them right, he had compassion on us and he sends us the rescuer that we need. Now, if we're those who have already experienced this rescue, that is something for which we should be daily thankful. We were spiritually hungry in the wilderness of this world, and he fed us with abundance. We were enslaved by sin and death and judgment, and he set us free. We were like sheep without a shepherd, and he has come to lead us. And as his rescued people, we should have the Lord's compassion for those who are still trapped and still enslaved and still like sheep without a shepherd and still hungry and helpless. Do we have his compassion? Or do we look at the crowds, the needy crowds, with irritation? A disturbing interruption to our rest and relaxation. Do we feel, well, serves them right, you know, that they deserve what's coming to them? It would be good for us to pray to the Lord to give us his compassion for people, that we would see them as he sees them, having no hope and without God in the world. Well, straight after this miracle, we witness another miracle, not now feeding with bread, but this time walking on water. In verse 45, Jesus sent the disciples off in a boat to head back over the Sea of Galilee, while he himself stayed on the land on his own, and he headed up a mountain to pray. Night falls, the disciples are having a hard time of it, they're heading into the wind, and so in the middle of the night, Jesus heads out to them, not in a boat, but walking on the water. Verse 48 says, about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. Walking on the sea. I mean, surely this is the most famous of all Jesus's miracles. It's even become a common expression, hasn't it, for doing the impossible. So someone in the workplace says, you know, because Penelope pulled off that amazing business deal, her boss now thinks she walks on water. You may remember in 2011, the illusionist known as Dynamo, he walked across the Thames, albeit on a plexiglass way just underneath the water. But just about everyone, I think, would have got the reference to Jesus. But why did Jesus do it? Was it just that he couldn't be bothered getting into a boat? What was the significance? Well, as with the feeding with bread, the walking on water, it links back to the Exodus, this great rescue in Israel's history. So when God rescued his Old Testament people, he did a water miracle in Exodus 14. So when the people had fled out of Egypt, the Egyptian army pursued them. They cornered them at the Red Sea. And all seemed lost. But then God, through Moses, made a way through the sea, parting the waters, so his people could walk through and escape. And so the Old Testament prophets look forward to the day when God would rescue his people from a greater slavery. From slavery to sin and death and the devil and judgment. And on that day, he would bring his people again through the waters. So by walking on the water, Jesus is proclaiming that the time of the ultimate rescue has finally come. Some of the details in Mark's account, they echo the crossing of the Red Sea, the strong wind, the timing at night, the hard hearts. In Jesus, the divine rescuer has come. Divine rescuer. So this is none other than God himself come down in the person of Jesus to rescue his people. In verse 48 we read that he meant to pass them by. Which, it seems an odd detail, doesn't it? It makes it sound as if Jesus wasn't actually going out to the disciples on the sea, but he was just going for a bit of a stroll to stretch his legs. But the passing by language has lots of Old Testament significance. For example, in Job chapter 9, it's a passage where Job is talking about the huge gulf between the Creator and man. And he says of God the Creator, he says, he trampled the waves of the sea. He passes by me, and I see him not. Well, in Jesus, this Creator God walks on the waves of the sea, and he passes by, but now he is visible. This passing by language, it also echoes the occasion when God revealed himself to Moses. Exodus 34, verse 6, it says, the Lord passed before him. Now God is revealing himself in the person of Jesus. And even Jesus' comment here in verse 50, where he says, it is I, is literally, I am. The very name by which God revealed himself. That was to Moses back in Exodus 3, 14. So in Jesus, God himself has come to rescue his people. But again, the question it puts to us is, do we think we need rescuing? I mean, God clearly thinks we do. I mean, why would he have bothered to give us a model of this in the Exodus from Egypt, of what he would do? Why would he bother to send the prophets to prepare us for this? Why would he bother to come down in the person of Jesus? Why go to all this trouble if we're okay as we are? God clearly thinks that we're in dire straits and we need rescue. Do we know better than him? The other day, a little warning light came on our car dashboard saying that there was a problem with the steering. What did I do? Well, I didn't get out my hammer and my screwdriver kit. I got on the phone to the RAC, and they got some engineer guy to come out and have a look at it. I just don't have the expertise. And so when it comes to the problem of sin and judgment and death, what makes us think that we can sort it out? We can't. We need expert help. We need divine intervention. We need rescue. I was reading an article about the 33 miners, 10 years on from their ordeal. When they were rescued, they became such a symbol of hope and solidarity. But now, a decade on, it was a sad tale of bitterness and division and trauma and jealousy and sickness. They were rescued from the gold mine the decade before, but humanity's biggest enemies still held them captive. Sin, death, judgment. These things hadn't gone away. They still needed the ultimate rescue through the ultimate rescuer, as we all do. So why don't more people see this? Why don't more people get it? Why do so few people seem interested in this rescue? Well, the passage actually gives us the answer. This passage is not just about feeding with bread and walking on water. It's also about hardness of heart. After Jesus walks on the water, we read in verse 51, and he got into the boat with them, that is with his disciples, and the wind ceased. And they were utterly astonished, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. Why were the disciples utterly astounded by Jesus walking on the water? Because, for, it says, they didn't understand about the loaves. If they had understood the bread miracle, they would have known that Jesus was the divine rescuer. But instead, they didn't get it. And why didn't they get it? Well, it says because their hearts were hardened. Now, that is a shock. Hard hearts, that's what God's enemies have. So in chapter 3, verse 5 of Mark's Gospel, Jesus was grieved by the hardness of heart in the Pharisees. Back in Exodus 14, Pharaoh, the Egyptians, they had hard hearts. But now we learn that even Jesus' own disciples, even the apostles, they had hard hearts. And that's why they didn't get it either. They didn't get who Jesus was, the divine rescuer. They didn't get why he'd come on this ultimate rescue operation, because their hearts were hard. And what was true of the disciples back then is true of us too. Then all of us by nature, we have a heart problem. And because of our hard hearts, we don't get who Jesus is, and we don't get why he's come. We don't understand. And for that to change, we need a miracle. A miracle done not just in front of us, but in us. Not just before our eyes, but in our hearts. Only then can we get it. So spiritual understanding, it has got nothing to do with intelligence or education. There was this 10-year-old primary school girl I was reading about who got the highest possible IQ score in a Mensa test. She beat Albert Einstein. She beat Stephen Hawking. Good on her. But high IQ doesn't change a hard heart. Nor does education. So her mum there is studying for a PhD at the moment. Good on her. But all the degrees in the world don't change a hard heart. We need divine heart surgery by the Holy Spirit. And given not even the disciples understood, it's no surprise that the crowds didn't understand either. And because of that, they wanted Jesus for their own agenda. And what was true then is still true today. That hard hearts, they just don't get why Jesus has come. And hard hearts rewrite Jesus' mission. I put on the outline there three ways in which this can happen. First, the crowds wanted a revolutionary leader. In the account of the feeding miracle, there are hints of this in Mark's Gospel. Why mention only the men? Well, because a crowd of 5,000 men is pretty menacing. It's threatening. They're like sheep without a shepherd. They wanted a leader. Jesus, you'll note, he sends his disciples quickly away at the end. He disperses the crowd, perhaps because he sensed danger. You see, Galilee, this area in the north, was actually the stronghold of the Zealot movement, the freedom movement against Rome. John records in his account of this incident that the crowd were about to take him by force and to make him king. And so today, hard hearts exploit Jesus for a political agenda. They see him as a political revolutionary. Just finished reading the autobiography of Malcolm Muggeridge, the journalist. He was brought up in a passionately socialist household, and as a young man in the early 30s, he thought that communism was the answer to society's problems. And like him, senior figures in the Church of England of the day actually invested their hopes in Stalin in the Soviet Union. So the Archbishop of Canterbury at the time, and his dean. They preached in the cathedral that Stalin was building the kingdom of Christ. This was before he started killing millions of people. But it's a striking example, isn't it, of how Jesus' mission can get distorted into some political manifesto and hijacked. Well, second, the crowds wanted not just a revolutionary leader, they also wanted a material feeder. No doubt many at the feeding of the 5,000, they just enjoyed a free meal and they didn't see beyond that. All they saw was a way of cutting their household food bills, as Jesus reveals in John's account. And so today, hard hearts, they just see Jesus as a way of getting your best life now. Jesus becomes just a person to help you fulfill your dreams, realize your potential, achieve your goals. The crowds wanted a revolutionary leader, a material feeder, and a physical healer. So in verses 53 to 56, when Jesus gets to shore, the crowds come running from everywhere with their sick to be healed. Verse 56 we read, wherever he came, in villages, cities, countryside, they laid the sick in the marketplaces. They implored him that they might touch even the fringe of his garment. And he did heal them. We read, as many as touched it were made well. But did they see beyond this? Was physical healing, was that all they wanted? Or did they see their need of spiritual healing, of forgiveness, of ultimate rescue? The passage ends with this Greek word, sozo. It can mean heal, or it can mean save. And you have to work out from the context which it means. So were they just physically healed, or were they saved? The physical healings brought people to a fork in the road. Would they take the path to salvation, or would they just see Jesus as a miracle worker? And we face the same choice. Many people pray to God when they're in trouble, when they're sick, lonely, feeling low, when they're having a hard time at work, when they're struggling in their marriage. They cry out to him. And that's not wrong, but it can't be all. We don't just need healing. We need salvation. That is why Jesus has come. But to see that, to get it, to receive him, we need our hearts changing. Well, if we do get it, we should be full of thanks to God this morning for his mercy to us. And if we don't get it, well, we need this heart operation. On the NHS at the moment, thanks to the COVID wrecking ball, you'd be facing a lengthy wait for surgery. But with God, there's no waiting list. You just have to make the call.